You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
In reading the Canadian Broadcasting Act, the words community, educational, and public service are given immediate prominence. The Act says broadcasting is intended to enhance our national identity and cultural sovereignty. It requires public access to broadcast facilities and bandwidth. It also requires that the public be encouraged to use them. The CRTC issued a notice of public consultation. It wants to know how well the television and cable companies are supporting public access to broadcasting facilities and whether the policy of public access should be continued. The Canadian Association of Television Users and Status, or CACTUS, replied to the CRTC, and Catherine Edwards from CACTUS joins us today. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for joining us.
Yep, no problem. It's a pleasure.
Now, briefly, what is public or community access TV?
It's extremely similar to public access or community radio, so your listeners should be familiar with the concept. But it basically has two main elements. One is that it's community-owned and operated, so that's a definition currently on CRTC policy for community radio, and for community television in every other country except Canada. We can get back to that in a minute. Typically, it's not for profit, so it's got a non-commercial nature. So any funds it raises or has are meant to be put into programming and facilitating public access. And then thirdly, public access. So not only is it owned and operated by the community, so it would have a community board of directors, but it's meant to be it's meant to give a platform for the public to express itself, so that anybody in the local community where the license is held should be able to, you know, come on, make programming, express a point of view, and get help to do that. So have, you know, free access to equipment and studio space, and training support, because, you know, television as well as radio, you need a certain amount of you know, savvy to put together a program. So that's the idea.
And what are the current objectives for community access TV?
The objectives are the same. They really haven't changed since community television was first introduced into Canada in the early 1970s, and we were the standard bearer for the world in that. We're the first country to officially recognize community television as a separate sector than the public and private sectors. And I don't have the policy in front of me, but it talks about engendering a high level of citizen participation, creating complementary programming to those available in the public-private sectors, advertising the availability of training programs and equipment for public use. So they're all objectives that haven't changed over time, and we feel are equally, if not more, necessary and relevant today in 2010 as they were in the early 1970s, particularly in an environment of hyper-media concentration. We think it's more important than ever that there be platforms that people can get onto to be heard in mainstream media, to provide a balance to, you know, the increasingly concentrated voices coming from the private sector.
Now, going back a little to the early days of the community TV, I understand the National Film Board had a series called Challenge for Change.
That's right.
How does that series relate to the idea of community access TV?
That's where the idea came from. At that time, everybody's heard about, disastrous instances where, northern communities were moved for one reason or another. There was a small community on Fogo Island off of Newfoundland that had been having trouble maintaining itself on fishing, and the government was asked to look into it. There were serious problems with poverty. This was the late 1960s. And somebody clever and forward-thinking in government said, well, hey, instead of just moving these people, they're deciding what should happen to them. Why don't we, send the NFB out and film them with their opinions and bring the film back to Ottawa so we can see what these people have to say about the conditions they're facing. And what they found is when the NFB filmmakers went there is people weren't comfortable talking immediately in front of what was then 16mm film cameras. They said, if you're going to tape these interviews, we want to be able to look back at them first. We want to be able to edit what we said. We want to be able to look at them as a community together, and then we'll send the tapes back to, or the films back to Ottawa. And what they found in the process process of doing this is when they sat in a town hall or a community center and looked at this footage together, they were surprised how articulate they seemed. They were forced to listen to one another. You know, it wasn't your usual sort of competitive town hall meeting where everybody's focused and nervous about what they have to say, but nobody's really listening to anyone else. And in the course of doing this, they found that they got the solution to their own problems because they listened to one another. They realized they needed one school system, not six, that they needed better roads, that they needed to create a fishing cooperative. A whole series of things came out of it, which really the government didn't, in the end, have to impose at all. It was just about giving the community the infrastructure it needed to hear itself and articulate its own problems. And so the NFB found that so successful that there was other communities across Canada that had also been identified as having infrastructure and poverty issues. They did the same thing. They would send an NFB film crew out. They would pursue the same process, let people edit the footage, have control of the content, come up with their own problems. But it was relatively expensive, and video porta pucks were coming into Canada at that time, as well as cable television was coming into Canada at that time. And the government was knew that cable, everybody pretty much knew from the beginning it was going to be successful and lucrative. There were concerns about the amount of American programming and culture that would be bringing into Canadian homes. And so the CRTC said it had the idea, we want to have cable companies contribute something back to the communities that they're going to be making profits from in this way, and we want to increase the Canadian content available on those channels, you know, to balance the American signals that they'll bring in. And because of the work that had been going on at the NFB and them wanting to be able to put the tools of video production into community hands, they called this process the mirror machine, holding up communities to themselves to see what their issues were. They said, hey, well, let's have the cable companies offer one channel, free equipment and training to communities. So, you know, the NFB doesn't have to do this expensive process anymore. Everyone will have availability, and it will generate Canadian content at the same time. So it was a very direct link. Some of the same staff at the film board at the time, the head of English programming was Frank Spiller. He actually became a CRTC staff member and drafted the original 1975 policy. So,
and moving to the present, does the public currently get to make community TV?
It's very spotty across the country. Cactus estimates that about 10% of Canadians have meaningful access to television at the moment, meaning that they could go to a local community channel with an idea and for sure get it on there. What we find particularly, on the Western Canada since about 1997, Shaw had quite an aggressive corporate policy to just get rid of volunteers altogether. I was a volunteer coordinator at the headquarters channel in Calgary in 97. When letters were sent out to all volunteers saying, you know, don't come back, we're changing our format, we're going to an all-professional sort of newswheel format and hired all-professional crews to do that. There's little pockets of resistance to that policy. So on the West Coast, ICTV, Independent Community Television, has, complained and managed to keep producing tapes that air on Shaw, but they get no equipment or financial support to do that. In central Canada, Rogers has been a little better over the years. They've had, on their websites, it says you can volunteer, but it's typically in technical roles. You might still be able to go do camera operation or something, but it's relatively difficult to get a program on. And, for example, recent ads we've seen for Rogers saying, you know, we want some volunteer hosts, you've got to send a photo in. Or if you read through the program acceptance procedure, it's very competitive, and it says things like, subject to current resources and whether we think the idea is going to be appealing and popular. So it's not the platform where it used to be, where anyone could go and make a program by any means. And, in fact, we've done assessments of the program schedules for Shaw and Rogers recently. And although it's hard to tell sometimes whether they're staff-produced or volunteer-produced, just looking at information online, the majority of them seem to be staff-produced. The producer phone numbers and so on are all Rogers phone numbers. And then anecdotally across the country, we've had hundreds of people telling us, you know, we can't go to the cable channel anymore. They kicked us out 2 years ago. So, you know, there's a big mass of evidence out there that access isn't happening. And in addition to that, there used to be about 300 community television channels across the country. There is in the CRTC public notice that you refer to for the current policy review, it says that there's 139 channels. that cable operators run. But again, when we did our assessment, compared their program schedules online, they've progressively regionalized their service. So, for example, New Brunswick reports 6 different channels, but when we actually compared the program schedules, they're almost identical. So from Fredericton to Miramichi to Moncton, you're seeing the same programming with maybe, you know, one Miramichi-specific program all week, that kind of thing. So there's basically one programming service in all of New Brunswick run by Rogers. So they've tended to, because they professionalize production, you know, they're making it mostly with staff, that's more expensive, they've tended to consolidate the resources that they have in big centers, produce it professionally, and then distribute it throughout a whole region. So it's not hyper-local anymore either. So it's both professional and it's now regional.
And yet the government is allocating, I think, about $100
million? Well, the cable operators are required to spend, if they have a community channel, they're required to spend 2% of their gross revenues toward the channel, but only in large markets. It used to be that every cable company had to do it, and then it was only in systems over 6,000 subscribers, and then it was only in systems over 20,000 subscribers. So in small towns, they're not required to spend anything on community television, and that's another reason why the channels that do exist have become regional and focused rather than, you know, hyper-local the way they used to be. So that 2% of gross revenues does amount to over $100 million a year. I think it's around $5 million just for Vancouver. So you can do a lot of programming for $5 million, particularly when you're facilitating volunteers to do it. There's a huge capacity there that's just not being used. And there's also poor accountability for what's happening with that money. The CRTC has the power under the current, the legislation that governs the BDUs, that's the cable companies, to request logs that say, you know, how much access programming is being done per week and who's doing it, so that one could check. But we made an access to information request to get that information before Christmas, and we got a letter back saying that, you know, right back to 1990, since they'd never asked for this information, they didn't have it to give us. Since then, we've got another access to information request filled that shows that since 2002, which is the last time the policy was reviewed, in fact, they have done a few audits. So for a week in 2003, a week in 2004, and a week in 2005, they did ask some of the major cable companies, including Shaw, Rogers, Eastlink, Cogeco, to provide their logs. But there's a lot of things that don't line up in the logs. Like the conclusion of the CRTC staffers at the time was, in many cases, logs hadn't been kept at all and weren't available to be assessed. Programs were identified as so-called access programmings, which really weren't. Programs were being double counted. So, for example, in two areas just immediately around Halifax, the same program was being counted as programming hours in two different systems. So all the problems that we knew anecdotally were going on, you know, problems with access, problems with regionalization of programming, were identified in these audits. So this is the first time community TV policy has been reviewed since 2002, so that makes us feel really good that the CRTC has known for some time that there's problems, that they wanted to do a review, and we're hoping that they're going to address it.
Now, I understand the chance to submit comments and written material with respect to community TV to the CRTC has closed as of February 1st.
That's right.
Is there a chance for our listeners to make their views known?
What can really help is that we feel it's really important that MPs know that this issue is being examined, because when MPs and the political parties are aware of what's going on, for example, the Standing Committee on Canadian Heritage, there's informal feedback that goes on all the time between Heritage Canada, members of Parliament, and the CRTC. So when these issues are identified as of concern to Canadians, you know, in the form of letters to your local MP to say, you know, hey, I'm concerned about community TV, we haven't seen much production by local people and local groups here lately, that helps. Then MPs know that it's going on and they're watching. So absolutely. In fact, that's our main focus between now and the oral hearings at the end of April, is to make sure that that MPs know.
Well, Catherine, thanks very much for updating us on this today.
Okay, thank you very much, Sean.
We've been speaking with Catherine Edwards of CACTUS, the Canadian Association of Community Television Users and Status. For more information on this subject, visit the CACTUS website at cactus.independentmedia.ca.